Well, today I get to share the story of a prophet called Elijah and how he took down the prophets of a false god known as Baal and restored the hearts of God's people back to him. Now, the background and context is important here because for years and years, generation after generation, Israel had had terrible kings and evil leaders, one after the other, just these evil men and kings who would always point the hearts of the Lord's people away from him and onto false gods. And so false worship or idolatry was rampant for ages, for generations. Now, idolatry or idol worship, it's just this idea that every time, any time that we put anyone or anything above the Lord and give our worship to that instead of him, that's idolatry. That's not okay. God is the only one deserving of our full worship. But this is what king after king had done until eventually a guy called King Ahab comes to power. And the scriptures say that Ahab did more evil in the eyes of the Lord than any before him. So in this lineage of evil kings, Ahab was the worst. But at the same time, the Lord raised up a prophet called Elijah. And Elijah goes to King Ahab and he says, because of the evil things you've done and because of the ways you've turned God's people away from him, there's not going to be any rain. It's not going to rain again until I say so. Now, in addition to wreaking havoc on an agricultural society and economy, there was a very specific reason that Elijah challenged the rain. Because this false god Baal, he was supposedly the god of rain. So Elijah is directly confronting Ahab and directly confronting this false worship and saying, you think your God is bigger than my God? You think he's stronger? He's better? He's mightier? Well, we'll see about that. And so sure enough, there is no rain in the land for 3 years. There's a drought and it impacts everyone and everything until eventually Elijah comes back to King Ahab and he says, right, we're going to find out once and for all now. We're going to figure this out right now. Who is the one true God? And so we read this story in 1 Kings 18. I'm going to be reading from verse 20, but it'll come up on the screen as well. So Ahab sent word throughout all Israel and assembled the prophets on Mount Carmel. Elijah went before the people and said, how long will you waver between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal is God, follow him. But the people said nothing. So the plan, the idea was that these prophets, they were going to be given a bull to make a sacrifice. And they'd get to set up their altar and pray to their God. But Elijah was also going to get a bull to make this sacrifice. And he was going to set up the altar and he was going to pray to his God. And the first God to respond as fire coming down and consuming this sacrifice of a bull, that was the real God. Okay, that's the plan. That's what everyone's agreed to this, right? So the prophets of Baal, they're going to start. And it says, they took the bull given them and prepared it. Then they called on the name of Baal from morning till noon. Baal, answer us, they shouted. But there was no response. No one answered. And they danced around the altar they had made. At noon, Elijah began to taunt them. I'm not going to lie, this is my favorite bit. Because Elijah gets so gobby, and it's just great. But he begins to taunt them. Shout louder, he said. Surely he is a god. Perhaps he's deep in thought, or busy, or traveling. Maybe he's sleeping and must be awakened. So they shouted louder and slashed themselves with swords and spears, as was their custom, until their blood flowed. Midday passed, and they continued their frantic prophesying until the time for the evening sacrifice. But there was no response. No one answered. No one paid attention. So they've had their turn, and now it's Elijah's turn. And so we skip down to verse 33. He, Elijah, arranged the wood, cut the bull into pieces, and laid it on the wood. Then he said to them, fill four large jars with water and pour it on the offering and on the wood. Do it again, he said, and they did it again. Do it a third time, he ordered, and they did it the third time. The water ran down around the altar and even filled the trench. Now, we can read this story, and some scholars do read it this way, that he was pouring this water out because it's harder to light fire when something's wet. So he was kind of setting the Lord up to be a bit more impressive, right? And maybe there's some truth in that. But I also don't know that fire coming down from the sky and consuming a bull needs to be more impressive. Like, it's pretty impressive, right? So there must be something deeper happening here. Let's not forget, Israel is in a drought. There hasn't been rain in 3 years. So water is their most precious resource. And Elijah is wasting it. He's pouring jar after jar, bucket after bucket of water onto this altar for the Lord. Why? Well, one, I think he had just a deep faith and confidence that the Lord was going to come through. But two, he's showing everyone there that there is someone worthy of that sacrifice. There's someone worthy of following. That actually, that there's someone greater. There's someone more powerful, more important. There's someone who can take care of you when everything in the natural says otherwise. So he gives the Lord his most precious thing. His most precious resource. He pours it out on the altar. And the story continues. At the time of sacrifice, the prophet Elijah stepped forward and prayed, Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known today that you are God in Israel and that I am your servant and have done all these things at your command. Answer me, Lord. Answer me so these people will know that you, Lord, are God. And that you are turning their hearts back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and burned up the sacrifice, the wood, the stones, and the soil, and also licked up the water in the trench. When all the people saw this, they fell prostrate and cried, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. And all of God's people returned to him. They chose him all over again, chose to follow him. Now, I was given this story, this miracle to teach on and share today as part of our 40 Days of Breakthrough sermon series. But the funny thing is that this story isn't actually the breakthrough. At least not the way we think about breakthrough or the ways we've seen it discussed in the previous weeks of this series. Because the people weren't looking for fire to fall down from the sky. They didn't actually care about that. They wanted rain. That's what they were after. They wanted the drought to end. That's what they cared about. If they had their little breakthrough cards, it would have said, for the drought to end. That's what they were seeking. But what this story teaches us is that it's not actually about the rain. It's about their heart posture. It's about their worship. Who are they going to follow? Who are they going to love? Who are they serving? That's what's the important thing here. It's not about the rain. The rain does come. After the fire falls, the drought ends, rain comes, it's great. But it's not about that. And I think it's so easy for us to make the thing, the breakthrough, the healing, the promise, provision, whatever your thing is, to make that our God. Just like the Israelites made the God of rain their God. Anytime we put anything above the Lord, even a good thing, anything above him is idolatry. And I do worry in a series like this and in a season where we are going after the individual breakthroughs and the corporate breakthroughs, that we would become so consumed with that, that it would be our idol. You know, our worship pastor, Johnny, and I were chatting about it this week, and he just said it this way, that the breakthrough isn't your God, God is your God. And it is that simple. It's that clear. The breakthrough cannot be your God. It can only point you to the one who gave it. And listen, I love those little cards, and I hope you're using them. And I hope and pray that you are getting, that you get every single thing that's on that card. I really do. And I hope and pray that this sermon series is giving you the tools and the faith you need to pray and believe. But hear my heart on this, because I actually don't want you to get the things on your card if it doesn't bring you closer to Jesus. Because that's what it's about. It's always about him. And the hardest part of this story for me is that it doesn't end well. We've ended on the high note. Like, everyone's worshiping the Lord. They've come back to him. The rain comes. The drought ends. The prophets of Baal, they end up being killed. King Ahab eventually gets killed. It sounds great. It sounds like, yes, good guys have won. Awesome. But if you keep reading 1 Kings, the very last paragraph tells us about King Ahab's son, about the new king. And it says that he did evil in the eyes of the Lord, just like his father and mother. And he served and worshiped Baal. Everyone went back to their nonsense. Everyone went back to the idol worship. And so in one generation, everything that Elijah had stood for on that mountain, everything that he had proclaimed as the truth, is forgotten. It's lost. Just like that. Because there is a difference between a moment of breakthrough and learning to walk with the God of breakthrough. There's a difference. God has more for you than these moments of breakthrough. He has more for you than just ticking your prayer list off. He has abundance for you. He has this all-consuming love, this unending mercy. He has freedom for you in everything, every area of your life. And it's actually a freedom that's supposed to give other people their freedom. Your salvation is supposed to change the trajectory of your children's lives, the trajectory of your children's children's lives, of your children's 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 lives. The hope and joy that the Lord has given you should be shaking the strongholds of this town. Healings and resurrections and deliverance should be popping off everywhere you step. Because the Lord has anointed you, because he has called you and chosen you and empowered you, the brokenhearted should be healed. The captive should be set free. The dead should be raised. And those who walk in darkness should be walking in light. That is the breakthrough. That is what he has for you, for this nation, for this town. Elijah stood on that mountain and he made a choice. He chose to follow the Lord with everything. He chose to make a stand for him. Jesus. He chose to say, he is worth everything I have. Every precious resource is worth following this one. And, you know, Elijah has a difficult life. Because he actually doesn't get praised as the hero after this. Ahab and his wife Jezebel chase him out of town. They try to kill him. He ends up alone in a cave. But he chose to follow the Lord. And he chose to say that following him is worth everything. You know, I think of my friends who have made this choice. Those who I love and admire and respect. My heroes of the faith. and how they've done this and lived this out. I think of my friend Tiff, and she's leading a national movement, and in the midst of it, her oldest daughter gets hit by a minibus. And it was a miracle she even survived. But I watched Tiff lead thousands of us in worship, singing, "God is good and God is worthy," before we even knew her daughter would walk again. And I think of my friends Alan and Kelsey, who are about to move to the Middle East with their 3 children, all under the age of 4. Because less than 3% of missionaries are sent to unreached people groups. And I see the sacrifice of John and his wife Alice, the sacrifices they've made for Jesus and for this house and this family, the sacrifices all of our pastors and our leaders have made, and most of them you would never have any idea they've had to do it, because it's all happened behind the scenes and in their hearts. You know, I'm a single female pastor whose entire family and the culture I grew up in is 3,000 miles away. This isn't easy. There's a cost to this. But this is what the Lord has asked of me when he said, "Come and follow me." And so it's my joy to give him it. I gave my life to him almost 15 years ago. And you know, it hasn't always been easy. Sometimes it hasn't even been nice. There's been moments and seasons where it's been lonely and it's been scary or confusing or frustrating. But he has been worth every moment. Jesus has been worth every moment. He is always worth it. His people are worth it. This nation is worth it. Because I gave my life to him, not just my salvation. And sometimes we say we're Christian and we say I've given my life to him, but actually what we mean is that we prayed a prayer because we want to go to heaven when we die. That's not it. That's not following him. We give our lives to him. That's what he asks for. And if we give our lives to Jesus, we don't get to choose what we give and what he takes. We don't get to say, "Okay, you can have this part of my heart. You can have this part of my life." No, we gave him all of it because he's worth all of it. I think it's maybe easy to read this story and read a lot of the Old Testament and see this blatant idolatry, this blatant idol worship. And we can see it and just think, what a bunch of dummies, right? Like, how do you forget that God came down as fire and consumed a bull? Like, why would you worship anyone else? That's dumb. Listen, it's not any more dumb than you worshiping and following money or sex or football or Taylor Swift or your career or food or the gym or your friends' opinions or the promise of a spouse. Whatever. Anything that we put above him is idolatry. He asks for everything. And yes, our idol worship looks different now. Our idol worship doesn't look like slashing ourselves with spears and preparing a bull to be consumed. It doesn't look like that anymore. But maybe today your idol worship looks like you spending your tithe money on Beyonce tickets. Maybe it's you took that job promotion without even praying about it because you just saw the pay raise. You just saw the pound signs coming in. Maybe you've started dating that boy or having sex with that girl, and every time Holy Spirit tries to convict you, you ignore him. Or as soon as the weather gets good, you never come to church. Instead, you're out paddleboarding. Maybe you even read the Bible, but as soon as there's something in there you don't like, you skip some chapters. Our idol worship looks different today, but it is no less real and it is no less severe. I would actually argue it's more severe now, because we don't have to trudge up a mountain to give our offering to God. He lives inside of us. If you are a Christian, if you're a believer, he has come and made his dwelling in you. He has gifted his very self to you. His presence, his Holy Spirit is living and dwelling inside of you. You are the temple. You are the holy of holies now. So there is no room in your heart for two gods. You cannot serve two masters. It's not possible. Ahab tried to do this. He tried to serve two masters. If you read the whole book, the whole story, he's sometimes listening to the Lord. At one point, it says he humbly submits himself to him. At one point, this is really weird to me, he actually chooses a prophet of the Lord to be his right-hand man while his wife is actively murdering all the prophets of the Lord. Like, it's crazy. But he's constantly in this space where he's trying to get the best of both worlds. But he never chooses to follow the Lord. He never gives himself fully, gives his life, gives his precious resources to the Lord. And it doesn't end well for him. And it won't end well for you. Gone are the days of casual Christianity, where we can have one foot in and one foot out. God is an all-in God. He's asking for your everything. He's worth your everything. You cannot serve two masters. You cannot have two gods in your heart. And so the question today is the same question Elijah asked all those years ago. How long will you waver between two opinions? How long will you waver between two opinions, church? How long will you waver, Coastline? How long will you waver, Bournemouth? If the Lord is God, follow him. That is what the Lord is asking each and every one of us today.